argument, Mercatanti versus City of Chicago. Ms. Luce.
Good morning. May it please the court. On June 26, 2003, the City of Chicago and the trade unions that represent the class plaintiffs here entered into an agreement that is the centerpiece of this litigation, extending the 1999 to 2003 collective bargaining agreements while successor agreements were under negotiation. That agreement also stated that wage increases, if any, agreed to by the parties shall be retroactive to July 1, 2003, unless the parties mutually agree to another date. There's no dispute that the plaintiffs were covered by and paid according to the 1999 to 2003 contracts until they took early retirement the following February and March. As for the successor CBAs, the city and unions eventually agreed to raises for employees who were on the payroll as of July 18, 2005, and also those who were on layoff as of that date. Plaintiffs did not fall into either category and did not receive wage increases. This morning I will discuss how, on these facts, there is neither an implied contract nor an express one that entitles plaintiffs to additional wages above and beyond the amounts in the 1999 to 2003 CBAs, and also how any implied agreement is void for lack of a prior appropriation. There can be no implied contract because express contracts govern the plaintiff's wages here. In the case the district court relied on, ECHL provides no reason why this rule does not apply here. It's an example of a situation where...
So the express contract is this letter of June 26th?
On plaintiff's theory, that is...
Is that your point?
My point is the express contract that govern plaintiff's wages is the 1999 to 2003 CBA that was extended by the...
What's the significance of this letter to Duffy?
The significance of the letter to Duffy, its primary purpose was to extend the 1999 to 2003 agreements while negotiations were under what were ongoing. Of course, that that sentence about wage increases has to offer.
Well, this is a contract.
It is a contract that extended the 1999 to 2000.
So don't we have to interpret the contract?
Yes, we do.
So the plaintiffs think it means that these wage increases. The wage increases agreed to by the parties would be retroactive for everybody, right? Isn't that what they're arguing?
That is how I understand their argument.
Okay. What is wrong with the argument?
The argument is that under the plain language of that letter...
Don't use plain language.
Well, what the letter states is that it promises retroactivity for those employees who do receive wage increases. It does not promise that any of those employees will receive wage increases. In fact, that was the very reason for inserting the words "if any" after wage increases. The city was not willing to and did not at that point represent that anyone would receive wage increases.
Mm-hmm. And plaintiffs. That's really your argument, right?
I'm sorry.
Is that your basic argument, or is there more?
That is my argument as to how that letter should be interpreted. The plaintiffs do not dispute that the 1999 to 2003 CBAs covered them, and it did set forth an amount to be paid. Plaintiffs' subjective expectations based on what happened with retroactivity and prevailing rate and other CBAs is irrelevant. Whatever agreements were reached here were reached by the unions and the city, and the Illinois Public Labor Relations Act does not allow direct dealing with employees, so their subjective views are completely irrelevant, and it is clear that the unions and the city did not agree to wage increases.
The retirees got some premium for early retirement, didn't they? Didn't they get some additional
they
credits?
Did. They, They did. They retire pursuant to the terms of an early retirement incentive program, and they receive some pension enhancement benefits.
And at the time they did that, it was uncertain as to whether there would be a pay increase or a retroactive increase for the time they worked up to the time of retirement, right?
That is correct. The wage increases were still under negotiation. Of course, none of that sheds light on what the parties, the union and the city, agreed to. And there were two contracts that that are at issue here. And under one, wages were provided for, and that was under the 1999 to 2003 agreements. And there was a later one in which did not provide for wage increases for plaintiffs.
How long after the letter did that second agreement?
That was in October of 2005 that the second set of CBAs were ratified by City Council.
2 years later.
Yes. So when they left, it was under negotiation. Now, the contracts were under negotiation that had the potential to provide more is true enough, but a contract is under negotiation is not the same thing as a contract that promises pay but leaves the amount open. There was no promise to pay anything in the June 2003 letter or anything else besides what was in the 1999 to 2003 agreements. This is not a kind of situation where a contract for more can be implied under the circumstances, precisely because express contracts at all times govern the party's wages. There just simply are no words in the letter to support the plaintiff's view. There's nothing to suggest that at that point the city intended to eliminate negotiation over who or whether different categories of employees would receive wage increases. The letter promises at most retroactivity for those who receive wage increases, and the employees who did receive wage increases under the next round of successor CBAs did receive retroactivity. So for these reasons, the plaintiffs have neither an implied contract claim nor an express contract that would entitle them to the wage increases that they seek. In addition to that, any implied contract would be void for lack of a prior appropriation under the Illinois Municipal Code. The plaintiffs here do not even argue that there was, in fact, a prior appropriation for these wage increases. They say it was not their burden, but plaintiffs are presumed to have knowledge of the municipal code, and we cite four Illinois cases that say it is their burden when they are seeking more than a salary that has already been expressly agreed to. The case they cite, Hall, put the burden on the defendants in an entirely different situation, where there had been an ordinance that had appropriated money, and the issue was whether or not that ordinance covered the payment that the architect sought there. Here, there were express agreements for the plaintiff's salary, and it is plaintiff's burden to show that there was any appropriation that would have approved anything above and beyond that. Plaintiff's breach of contract claim is also fails for failure to exhaust administrative remedies. They're bound to follow the grievance procedure in the 1999 to 2003 CBAs that indisputably covered them until they left employment. And under that agreement, it falls to the union to pursue any arbitration and follow-up court action based on the circumstances and conditions of their employment. And the cases that the plaintiffs rely on do not hold that a retiree can never be required to exhaust their administrative remedies. Those cases treat retirees differently because they involved benefits. They involved the circumstances and conditions of retirees' benefits, like health benefits, owed to them in their capacity as retirees, not employees. We cite several cases, Roman, Sahulik, and Uline, that all involved former employees who would not, on the actual day they filed the grievance, have met the definition of employee under the relevant labor statute either, because they had resigned or were fired. But the plaintiffs nevertheless were held to the grievance and arbitration procedures required under the collective bargaining agreements. And I would like to reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal, please.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Lewis. Mr. Cohen?
May it please the court and counsel. What is clear in this case is that the city and the plaintiffs did not reach an agreement or a final agreement with respect to their rate of pay. That is why the district court was correct in determining.
I understand that. This letter seems perfectly clear. Wage increases, if any agreed to by the party, shall be retroactive, period. And there was no agreement about wage increases for these retirees.
Well, there was an
Why isn't that the end of the case?
An express agreement between the
But the judge didn't find an agreement.
No, what I'm saying is
it was an implied contract. So, but I don't understand. They're certainly right. If you have an express contract, you don't start adding implied contracts. And this is an express contract, and it doesn't support you.
Well, what happened was that there was a later express contract between the union and the city, which set a retroactive.
Yes, I know, but that agreement did not extend to these retired people. Otherwise, you'd be arguing on the basis of a contract rather than some implied. I mean, the argument seems to be that somehow their work was worth as much as that of the other people, and therefore they should be paid more.
Well, the point is that the city did reach. We aren't saying that the city reached a final agreement as to the rate of pay with the plaintiffs.
Retirees.
We're saying that they did not reach a final agreement as to the rate of pay with respect to the retirees.
It seems to me they did reach an agreement. Each time a retiree retires, they agreed to take that deal, to take the extra credit, and sign out for what they had.
Well, there was nothing in that agreement that indicated that it affected their wage rate or their entitlement to retroactive pay increases or a wage increase. There was that
uncertainty, which I think they individually bargained away when they signed off for the additional benefit.
Well, there was nothing in that agreement that indicated that they were signing off on anything or waiving any rights with respect to their right to wage increase. The city could have put something in there that said you're waiving your rights to wage
increases.
But
there were no rights were ever conferred.
Well, the city and the plaintiffs were still negotiating as to what that final wage rate should be.
Yes, but there never came a time when they agreed to pay the retirees these retroactive wage increases.
Well, that's why there was an implied agreement
to do
so.
But what's the implied? All that the judge said was somehow he thought it was they should be paid the same as the other workers. I don't know what that has to do with contract.
No, I don't think the judge said that. I think what the judge
say that.
Well, what the judge said was that was an implied, in fact, agreement.
That's the conclusion. But the reason he gave for doing that was that was the fair price for them.
But it was based on the fact that the city and the plaintiffs had not reached an agreement with respect to the wage rate.
And this says that the retroactive payments are for people who get where there's an agreement to pay them, right? I mean, it says if agreed. And there was no agreement with respect to the retirees.
Well, there was no agreement as to the price to pay them. Certainly, the plaintiffs were working, and the city was accepting their work.
But they were never paid, right?
They were being paid, but there was never an agreement as to what the actual final rate of pay
would be. Of course there was. There was the agreement under which they were being paid. There was never a new agreement.
Well, the fact that there was, that they agreed to extend.
What the judge says, the fact that the city was willing to pay such a rate to other employees who were providing the same services would negate any argument that he found it to be an unreasonable amount. Well, fine. It would have been a reasonable amount. It's just that there was never any agreement to pay them that amount.
Well, the case.
That's his whole argument.
The case law indicates whether there's
an. One page.
The case law. Well, the judge talks within the due process in his context when he's discussing the due process argument. He talks about why there's an implied.
I don't understand your due process argument. I don't see what interest they have that's they're deprived of. The retirees.
Well, of course, you don't have to reach the due process argument if you affirm the district court.
Answer his question.
I'm going to. The due process argument is that the retirees were not notified that they were giving up any type of right to retroactive wage increases or
well,
to their.
It was never conferred. The right was never conferred on them. So I don't understand what
no,
you're
we
saying.
Disagree with that. We think that there was a right to a reasonable rate of pay because there wasn't a final agreement reached
well,
between the plaintiffs.
And due process never arises. That's just your implied contract argument.
Well, the due process arises because there's a lack of notice, a lack of opportunity for a hearing or to negotiate with the...
Yeah, but that falls with your implied contract argument, right?
Well, if there's no
right,
property
there's no,
interest...
Right, exactly. Then there's no due process.
The pay increases,
right.
Then there's
it's
not
just
a due process violation.
Just added words.
Except that they were giving up their right to their employment. I mean, the idea that...
Also, I don't understand you're filing a cross appeal. What's that about?
The cross appeal was with respect to the counts that the judge granted summary judgment for the city.
Are you asking for an alteration in the judgment?
Well, with respect to the due process clause, that would...
Are you asking for an alteration in the judgment?
Yes, with respect to the cross appeal issue of the due process clause.
That's an issue, the judgment, the relief.
The judgment, yes, the relief would have to be...
Asking for different relief.
The relief would have to be altered in several ways. One is with respect to attorney's fees, it would be available on different grounds. The attorney's fees that were awarded were common under the common fund doctrine. Under the due process clause, attorney's fees would be awarded under 42 U.S. Section 1988.
It wouldn't be any different, would they?
It would be different because then the plaintiffs would get the full value of their rights.
You said plaintiffs request that the court affirm the district court's decision in this matter in its entirety.
That's correct because we're arguing only the cross.
We're signaling that that would be followed by a request for attorney's fees.
No, we argue that we are asking for it to. We argued in the alternative. We asked for the court to affirm the district court's in entirety. We said that.
No, there's no alternative. That's all you asked for.
I believe that we argued pretty clearly that.
No, you don't. Look, you say request the court affirm the district court's in its entirety. Alternative, if and only if the court reverses the decision, then you want something else. But you don't want more. You're not asking for more.
Well, we are asking
due process.
We are asking for more because
you're not asking for more relief. You're not asking for more money.
We are because
no, you're not. Show me where you are.
Because
show me where you are asking for more relief.
Because we're asking for
you. Show me where.
Well, in the reply brief, I think we make clear that
too late in a reply brief.
That what the difference in relief would be in asking for a reversal of the judgment on the due process clause. But
you don't say anything different in the conclusion of your reply brief. You never ask for additional relief, which is what you have to do in order to be entitled to file a cross appeal.
But we're asking for...
You can't just file a cross appeal to ask for alternative grounds of affirmance.
It's not an alternative grounds for affirmance because the district court...
You're not asking for additional relief.
Well, the district court didn't get to the relief stage on the due process claim, so we would need for the district court's opinion entering summary judgment for the city on the due process claim.
You're asking for the decision to be affirmed in its entirety. You're not asking for a different relief.
Well, we believe that the case is comparable to Martin versus Campanaro, which we cited, where... It was a similar situation, and the court found that there was a contract implied in fact to pay the reasonable value of services unless a new contract definitizing the wage rates should be negotiated. And in the meantime, the employees accepted merely on account what was paid them. Accordingly, there must be a hearing to determine the value of claimant services. I believe it's a similar situation in this case and to the cases we cited like Eckel, and the hospital cases that we cited. Because there was no final agreement. The city didn't even really dispute this in their briefs that there was no final agreement as to the final wage rate that would be paid to the plaintiffs in this case. They reached a final agreement as to what to pay the other employees who were on the payroll as of July 18, 2005. But there was never a final agreement.
Right, which means that they continued to be paid under the old rate because there was no agreement. There was no agreement to give them this retroactive wage increase.
Well, the fact that there was no agreement to give them the retroactive pay increase, there was also no agreement on behalf of the parties that the rate that they were being paid was going to be their final rate of pay. It was still being negotiated.
You don't need an agreement like that. That would be like having an agreement with an employee which says, I'm paying you $10 an hour, and I'm not going to ever change it. Not going to ever give you a retroactive increase. That'd be a very strange contract.
No, but the contract expired, and the language in that letter agreement has to have some significance. It wasn't, the contract was just not simply extended.
The language does have significance. It says that if there's an agreement, if there's an agreement on wages with somebody that to raise his wages, that raise will be retroactive for those people, not for other people.
Well, but the point of that language was that there was still they were still negotiating as to what the final wage rate
Precisely.
Would be. And because there was no agreement as to what that
well,
final
what if
wage rate would be.
Agreed the fact to make that, it retroactive for one person.
The fact that they
What if they just agreed to make it retroactive for one person?
If they agreed to make it retroactive to one person later, then I think there'd be an argument about what the reasonable rate of pay would be.
For everybody else?
For everybody else. And the fact that
it's
it was only
strange.
One person would probably mean that it wasn't the reasonable.
So anytime someone gets a raise, everyone else can say, well, you didn't say whether or not you were giving me a raise.
Well, if they're paying the great majority of people one amount of money, that would be significant.
Well, that's why
that
I used the example of one person, but you said it was the same case.
I didn't say it was the same
yes,
case.
You did.
I
you
said
you
that
said there would have
be
to be a
difference
a
as to what the reasonable
you
rate of pay would be.
There would have to be a determination of the reasonable rate of the other people.
There would have to be a determination
no,
as to the reasonable rate of pay if the parties
the
did not agree as to
that's
the rate of pay.
That's the proposition, which you don't understand, that the mere fact that you agree to give a person a raise and you don't say anything about any of the other employees doesn't create an ambiguity as to whether they're getting the raise.
That's not the same situation because in this case there was no agreement between the plaintiffs and the city as to what their final rate of pay would be. It was being negotiated. The reason that they entered into that letter agreement was because the old agreements were ending. They were expiring. The city wanted the employees to continue working. Okay, they didn't want them to go on strike. They wanted them to continue working. So they entered into that letter agreement, which just provisionally extended those terms while they were negotiating as to what the final rate of pay would be. They reached an agreement as to the final rate of pay with the non-retirees. They did not reach a final agreement as to the rate of pay with the retirees. Therefore, what is that rate of pay? You can't say that there's an express. There was no express agreement as to that rate of pay. That was really an undisputed fact. With respect to the appropriation argument, the city did not raise that argument, did not put on any evidence about that argument in the district court. They tried to raise it on appeal and put some evidence on it on appeal. It's totally unfair to raise that issue at this stage, and the cases that they cited all involve situations where that issue was tried and there was evidence put on by the municipality as to lack of appropriation. I believe my time is up. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Cohen. Ms. Luce, do you have anything further?
Just a couple of brief points. The plaintiffs left while contracts were under negotiation. So while it might be fair to characterize the overall situation as a final rate of pay being left open, that is not the same thing as saying there was a contract promising pay for which the amount was left open. There was a contract that provided for pay in the 1999 to 2003 agreements. The 2003 to 2007 agreements did not provide for pay at all. And, in fact, there was an agreement as to what the plaintiffs would be paid. It was not merely left open. It was negotiated, and the 2003 to 2007 CBAs resolved all demands and issues that were under negotiation between the parties. The plaintiffs might have hoped for something more out of the negotiations of a successor CBA, but that is not a situation where the contracting parties, the union and the city, failed to fill in the blanks about how much these employees would be paid. If there are no further questions, I would ask that the judgment of the district court be reversed.
Okay, thank you very much, Ms. Luce.